So I think back somewhat often to a night, it's about 3 or 4 years ago now. So I had been the chaplain, one of the chaplains at St. Thomas Aquinas at Iowa State. I loved working with the college students. I really enjoyed my fellow campus ministers. It was just a really joyful time. And then I was asked to become pastor in my previous assignment up north, 6 very rural parishes. And that was a joy also. But I had the opportunity, I was asked to come back to Iowa State and to give a talk. There were these monthly kind of evangelization events that we would do. And so they invited me to come back. And afterwards, my fellow campus ministers and I had kind of gotten into the habit of once a month just going and having a drink and talking about our spiritual lives and what God had been doing. And it was really beautiful, just time of spiritual sharing and friendship. And so we did that. It had been almost a year since I had been there, and so it was a good chance to catch up. And, you know, we stayed pretty late into the night and decided it's time for us grown-ups to go home and get some sleep. And so we started to walk back to campus. It's only a couple of blocks away, back to the church. And it goes right through kind of the main drag where the bars are. So while us adults are getting ready to go to bed, it's just starting to liven up for the college students. And I was, of course, dressed in my clerics and was walking through and didn't think anything of it because I'd done it a dozen odd times before the year prior. But as we started walking, I heard this group of very big college guys start talking about the priest abuse scandal. They had quieted down when they saw me and then started talking definitely loud enough so that I could hear. And one of my fellow campus ministers started to kind of get into a huff and turn around. And I mean, these guys were a lot bigger than us. And beyond the practical, it wasn't time for that. But inside, as I reflected, I didn't want to pick a fight, but I wanted to sit them down and try and explain and go, look, I'm not that. Most priests aren't that. I wanted to explain. I wanted to somehow kind of take control and get justice, correct what was wrong in their perspective. And I didn't. We didn't. We just walked back to the church and got in our cars and went back to our homes. And that moment comes back every so often. I think of it when have to go out in public, you know, maybe after some more news about the Catholic Church has broken out, or this weekend with Roe v. Wade, us living now in a post-Roe world, praise God, wondering what will be said, what will people think, seeing the witness of Jesus Christ made present to their popular imagination through a collar. And a lot of times it's not good in the secular world, and we know that. We know that our faith is challenged. And so that can be something that deeply saddens us. So what does this have to do with the Sacred Heart of Jesus? I find it so striking and beautiful that the gospel reading we're given is Jesus already dead. Right? He is already dead on the cross at the height of indignity, that he is stripped naked, has been spat upon, beaten, mocked by everyone who could mock him. His friends have abandoned him. Only his mother and a couple of the other disciples remain. They are utterly powerless to stop what's gone on. And it looks like it is all over. And yet there is one more indignity. They can already tell he's dead. That's the reason that you break the legs of a crucifixion victim, is to finally asphyxiate them. But they knew they didn't need to. So whatever inspired this particular soldier to pierce Jesus' side, it was either useless or it was mockery, a soldier treating a body as if it were not even human anymore. And it's in that moment that blood and water flows from Jesus' side. That is later great saints will write, you know, the treasure of the temple is poured out. That we associate the life and power of our sacraments with that moment, right? With that supreme indignity, with that supreme moment of looking like everything is lost and everything is hopeless. So what is our response to that? What is our response when it feels as though Jesus is dead and absent? And this can come to us in a lot of ways. It might come to us when we are mocked for our faith. It might come to us when we look at the corruption that has taken place in the last, 2,000 years of the church's history. When we look at our own sinfulness, perhaps especially moments of habitual sinfulness. When we look at those we would hope to convert in our own families and we feel like we're making absolutely no progress. What is our response? So I found it interesting, you know, Father Conway and I were aware of what some of those who are pro-choice talked about, things like Jane's Revenge and some of these other groups. And, you know, we paid attention to the internet to make sure that our parish names weren't popping up in planning or in, discussions online, and they weren't. But seeing the response of some who were Christians to the idea of a night of rage, that sort of mocking, maybe posing with weapons online and saying, go ahead, basically make my day kind of thing. And so what a beautiful thing that this weekend we have put before us, this moment tied to the Sacred Heart. This moment of Jesus in his supreme seeming powerlessness and indignity and mockery. And yet, this is his power, that even, and perhaps especially when he seems most vulnerable, dead, absent, God in his infinite generosity shows his love and power. Here is my blood, here is my water. It's a pious tradition. It's not in Revelation per se, but it was every drop of blood, every ounce of water or fluid from within him. Because that's the only poetic way to express the length to which God went to show how much he was willing to give to us. So what is our response? In our personal lives, in the public life, what is our response? And we hear St. Paul say to the Ephesians, right, to speak with the holy boldness. This is not a call not to witness to our faith, but this is a call from the heart of Jesus to go to our own hearts. The world, since those college guys mocked me on a street corner in Ames all those years ago, has only gotten angrier. I can only imagine now what it might have been. And all of this is because on some level, we, the whole world, believe we're in this alone, and so we have to assert our own power, to advocate for our position. And it's just us in here, so may as well give it all that we have, leave it all laying out on the field. But we are invited to see differently. No doubt we are called to witness right in the place that we actually have influence. But that witness isn't from our own intelligence or from our own power or from our own energy. If we do that, we will indeed end up exhausted and angry and fighting just like the world fights. But if, like John and Mary, like those witnesses who have testimony to what happens, as John says in his gospel, if we remain especially in that place where it seems as though God is powerless, but in expectation, in some sort of dark faith or hope, loving even the one who seems absent and powerless, we will see, we will experience, we will be bathed in what he gives. And this is something utterly supernatural, but we know that what we and what the world needs is utterly supernatural. We need the very lifeblood of God, if the kingdom is indeed to triumph, which, make no mistake, it will, because even this piercing of God's side is not his last word. But wherever we feel ourselves, the church, those around us, to be abandoned, we go back to the foot of the cross. We look up. We see Christ's pierced side. One of my favorite reflections is from a homily. It's a couple hundred years into the life of the church. And such vivid imagery, the saint says, "They have broken the wall of the temple, they have pierced my Lord's side, and I have reached in and found my treasure." So in our moments of experiencing supreme poverty, desolation, mockery, anxiety, may we take not just the words of that saint as our own, but his affections, his actions, to reach in and to find our treasure in the heart of Jesus that is powerful. It's the love that has shaped the universe, that has saved it, and that can save us as well. So as we draw close to Jesus in the Eucharist, may we invite him into the temple of our hearts, that his heart might be the center of it, and be the source of our witness, the source of our power, the source of our love in season and out of season.